So now we see this, hear this, receive and maintain this. What is this, and what hinders us from being this that we are? After all, throughout our life, we only encounter this that we are, and yet we often find ourselves missing this life, and we can know that when we are caught up in reactions. We can know that when we are stressed, suffering, doing harm, or even when we believe being harmed. When we look at the real form of our life, it is only this sashin mind, this unified heart, mind, life that we are. That's why we gather together today, practice together. Dogen has a very nice chapter in Shobo Genzo titled Ken Butsu, Meeting Buddha, or Meeting Buddhas. He begins the chapter, Shakyamuni Buddha addresses the great assembly. If we see both the many forms and their non-form, we at once meet the Buddha. This is from the Diamond Sutra. We all see many forms. Many forms includes every sense perception that we humans are. Don't get stuck with ideas of form. Dogen says, to see many forms and their non-form is a liberated bodily experience. And so it is to meet the Tathagata, the Tathagata, sometimes pronounced. Thus come, thus gone. Realization in which this eye of meeting, I as E-Y-E, is already open in experience is called meeting Buddha. The various ways the eye of meeting the Buddha, the vigorous ways called the eye of meeting the Buddha is eyes partaking in Buddha. When we see in others, meaning all that we encounter, whether we encounter inside, outside, whether it's so-called experiences we like or don't like, pleasant or painful, when we see in others our own Buddha, and when we see our own Buddha outside of Buddhas, outside of any limits and ideas that we put on Buddhas, all although all things are a tangle or intertangled, to have learned meeting Buddha in practice, to be pursuing and realizing meeting Buddha, to be getting free of meeting Buddha, to be attaining the vivid state of meeting Buddha, and to be utilizing meeting Buddha are the real manifestation of sun-faced Buddhas and real manifestations of moon-faced Buddhas. Meeting Buddhas like this, in each case, is meeting Buddhas whose faces are limitless, whose body is limitless, whose mind is limitless, and whose hands and eyes are limitless. Of course, that's one particular translation. There's other translations which might say it in a slightly different way. But what is important for us is to hear directly that it's not going somewhere else. It's not doing anything else. And yet, it's important to see the many forms and the many non-forms. If we just stay with the forms, we tend to believe what we add on to forms. If we just stay with the forms, meaning when we live our life, we often encounter circumstances and conditions that we don't want. People that we add on stories about. Events that shouldn't happen. Events that fail to happen. And those cease to be Buddhas for us. Not because they cease to be our own Buddha life, but because we fail to see the Buddha right in front of us. The reasons are numerous of why this happens, and we talk about them from time to time, but it's not a matter of hearing him from someone else, but being able to see where the hindrance is coming up, where what we're believing keeps us from experiencing the Buddha that we are, and seeing what to do. What to do even with the not seeing Buddha. But it's important, though Dogen lays it out very clearly, what there is for us when he adds on, not just Dogen, but the sutra, is seeing the many forms and non-forms. Now don't get stuck in non-form. Some people do that. And Dogen touches that right away. He brings up a quote from Zen Master Hogen, who's the founder of one school. I shouldn't say founder. Is considered the founder of one school of Zen Chan, who says, on this, if we see the many forms as non-forms, we are not meeting the Tathagata. Meaning if we try to get rid of the circumstances and conditions by somehow denying them with our ideas, even ideas of emptiness, ideas of some sort of theory, philosophy, beliefs. Then we miss the very Buddha as well. So don't believe this. It's very important for us to see what is the practice in our life. I've said it before, others have said it in their own way. We talked about it in class several weeks ago. It's some of the aspects of it are posted in on the blog with some of the questions I asked. What is it to be open and loving, or open and compassionate in our life? That's what meeting the Buddha in the many forms and non-forms. What hinders us often is our unwillingness to be, if I even say it simply, to be kindly, to have a kind heart towards circumstance which we react to out of arrogance, out of self-centeredness, out of disgust, distaste, not wanting. Right there, we're not meeting the Buddha of forms, not meeting the Buddha of non-forms. But don't believe, as Master Hogen, Fayan is his name in Chinese, as Master Fayan emphasizes, don't go to some sort of non-form as a way to get away from the form. It is only in entering the present moment as it is, in only opening, if we even say kind-heartedness. I think somewhere, if I remember correctly, the Dalai Lama said, "My religion is kind-heartedness." That's what he's talking about. That's the meeting the heart of whether we say our own life or the heart of Buddha. So what is it to be kind-hearted? In a way, that's being unified mind. Kind-hearted with what is hard for us to be. That's our opportunity. Part of my practice the past week the past few weeks with my injury and ever-increasing pain and incapacity has been being open and kind-hearted even to my pain, even with my pain. Different ways that has to be done. Sometimes it means screaming when the pain is so extreme. Sometimes it means simply breath by breath being kind-hearted to the specific pain moment, which means being willing and able, to the extent I can, to experience it. Much as I don't want it, that comes up, I don't like it, this shouldn't be, how am I going to, I can't take anymore. All sorts of other reactions that we have, that I had, that we have to physical and mental circumstances which arise, could be something simply as during sitting and thoughts, feelings, agitation come up. And right away, we can't be here. Or the other direction, all sorts of wonderful fantasies and dreams about, oh, it's going to be so great when I do, and then we're off when I do. Or if only she does such and such, then I'll be. Or if only, in all directions, we don't want to meet the Buddha of many forms and non-forms. Dogen, let me just rephrase using a slightly different quote. See thoroughly that all forms are Tathagata forms and not beyond forms. See the Buddha in this way. Make up your mind, realize, trust, and maintain these. See? Thus, keep seeing and hearing these words with your ears and eyes. Have the words drop away in your body, mind, bones, and marrow. Have the words seen through your mountains, rivers, and entire world. This is the practice of studying with Buddha ancestors. See, in a way, he's making the point more directly for us, and yet we have to make it even more direct. See, the words drop away in our body, bones, marrow, is in all the ways that we have this experiencing of being human. See? And inside and outside, no different. Mountains, rivers. See, can we at least notice when we're unwilling to meet this Buddha that appears? As I said, unwilling can be fantasies, unwilling can be reactions, anger. In one sense, if we generalize, unwillingness is arrogance. If we're arrogant, we can't be kind-hearted. We can't be open-hearted. We can't be loving if we believe our arrogance. And yet we even need to be kind-hearted with the arrogance which arises and not allow ourselves to act it out. Thus we see the form of Buddha in the arrogance and the non-form of Buddha in the arrogance. Then, encountering and embracing the arrogance, even that we're kind-hearted towards, the self-centered fantasies, we're kind-hearted towards them, meaning allowing them to arise and pass as the experience, the experiencing of this moment. And yet, giving ourselves completely to the moment, they are neither their form nor their non-form. Therefore, they're right here. Kind-heartedness towards pain, kind-heartedness towards others acting like jackasses, or arrogant, or nasty, or stupid. Kind-hearted to the person who makes stupid mistakes, whether it's me or others. How often have we looked at our own action and gotten, how could I have done something like that? How could I have missed that? I should have known better than that. Or towards someone else, how could they? See, right there, we refuse to see the real form of what our life is. And that's what our practice is, to enable us moment to moment to live the Buddha that we are. Because after all, only Buddhas meet Buddhas. That's why in the Bodhisattva's vow, it starts, when I, the student of the way, look at the real form of the universe. See? Kind-heartedness, if I use that kind of word, is not often a word that we add or attribute to Zen practice, because we often think of kind-heartedness as something different than the strict, severe, sitting upright. But strict, severe is just a daydream. It's another kind of arrogance that we can hold on to. Certainly, Dogen is known for the very precise ongoing practice that is sometimes called strict and severe. But if we let those labels blind us, then we miss what Dogen is saying. When Dogen was talking to one of his students, Tetsu Gikai, he said to him that this was at the very end of his life. He said to him that what, and this person had practiced with him for many, many years. And Dogen said, in essence, I'm not ready to give you Dharma transmission because you still lack grandmotherly kindness. I talk about this in my book, Everything is the Way, in the chapter on Jukai somewhere. I don't remember exactly what I say. And this grandmotherly kindness is really not something, what should I say, artificial or nicey nice, because then we get a different picture. Oh, everything is okay. I should never reject things. I should never add judgment when it's important. I should always give in, so on and so forth. That's nonsense kindness. That's not grandmotherly Buddha kindness. Not only Dogen says this. Hakuin Zenji, who's Rinzai master in the Japan, the 17th century, I think. Might be 18th, but for some reason I think it's the 17th. Well, I might be wrong. Anyway, he talks at length of the importance of grandmotherly kindness as our practice. Even though Hakuin was known for the severity, and if some of you have seen some of the self-portraits of him, you can see that what seems like severe face, strenuous practice he was known for towards himself and with his students. And yet, that strenuous practice comes out of grandmotherly kindness, is expressed in the dancing bodhisattvas that are our life, that dance in front of us from morning to night. And it's up to us to see the bodhisattvas, though they don't know they're Buddhas and bodhisattvas. I think I talk about that as well in that chapter on Jukai. So Dogen Zenji, Hakuin Zenji. But again, if I use, the problem of course is if we get stuck in the word, especially when we have stereotypes of what that word must be like, because grandmotherly kindness can include strict, severe practice, can include clear limits, can include ongoing doing what's called for right here, right now. But it's out of being and seeing the forms and non-form of Buddha that appears in front of us moment by moment by moment, that appears inside outside as our life, moment, moment, moment. And that's what we have this wonderful opportunity. Opportunity is our whole life that we have. See? In any event, in any moment, in any place, none can be other than the marvelous revelation of the glorious light that is our life. None can be other. As some of you know, that poem is from, written by Torei Zenji. Torei is a major Dharma successor of Hakuin. So Torei, who was known for his strenuous practice, was known for his ascetic going off as a hermitage practice. And yet, what it's about is being open-hearted with each moment. Not open-hearted foolish, but open-hearted embracing, experiencing this moment of our life. Painful. And knowing when it's painful, how to practice with that. Knowing when it's joyful, how to practice with that. And that takes your intelligence. See, your maturity is going to do it. So, Dogen can write things. The Buddha can write things. And the other ancestors can write all sorts of encouragement. And we sitting together are encouraged by each other to make sure we be the forms and no forms of Buddha which appear, which arise. Therefore, that means to be the Buddha that meets the Buddha. So we don't have to say, I have to change anything, but just be the Buddha meeting the Buddha, and it will appear. It does appear. So we have to do the work to experience this. Okay, I've talked too much. So I will stop and we can speak a little about this. See? I should say one thing. Dogen cites the sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. I've talked about that somewhere as well. I don't even know is that in the book or not? I don't remember. But in any way, that's an expression that was made well known by Master Matsu when he was sick and, in fact, if I remember correctly, it was just before he died, and he was approached and asked about this fundamental matter. And he responded, sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. So that's what Dogen reciting. Again, to remind us. Okay, I will stop and see if you want to say something. If you need to move, feel free to. Yes, Shoujo.
I found out not a couple of days ago when I was having the trailer where I was living inspected for, you know, to see whether or not I could get my deposit. And the landlady told me about my cat, BC, that he was actually maybe from the neighbor's farm just down the road or just across the road, across the field, uh-huh. over there, about a quarter mile away. And she had, and this woman had told my landlady about wondering what happened to her. She didn't know what happened to the cat. Must a coyote must have gotten him. But I thought, well, gee, I spent all this money on this cat to take care of this cat. Already had a home, but I was just like a barn cat. It wasn't no particular attention was given him. But he seemed like a nice cat, black with the little white. Right about here, it's sort of like a Zen monk or something. And I thought first, well, maybe I should get angry about that, you know. But I didn't get angry. I just felt like, well, that's all right. I mean, he did what he was supposed to do. He kept the mice down. He really did. Uh-huh. And so, even though it might have cost more, I mean, cost less to just put poison everywhere. I figured it must be. I'm glad I wouldn't pick the cat anyway. But anyway, I just had that choice of getting upset and feeling ripped off, or, you know, and I thought, well, that came up, but I chose not to you know, follow that so too far.
Yeah. It's not the circumstance, but what we do with it. It's not the circumstance and conditions that arise inside or outside, even, whether it's upset or feeling bad or feeling ripped off, but what we do with them, to see their form and not form. Not see. See, when we translate it with the English word see, we sometimes tend to separate ourselves. Me and what I see. When we meet Buddhas, it's Buddhas meeting Buddhas. There is no one else. When we meet our life, it's our life. There isn't me inside here and my life out there. It's, of course, it's fine. If I need to take medicine, I can't leave it on the table and say, okay, I need to take, put it in my mouth, and eat it, swallow it, do whatever they say. And yet, it's only Buddha going into Buddha. Only illness is Buddha too. Some of you might know, I've mentioned this before, at a certain point, Suzuki Roshi, when he was having stomach cancer, and dying of it, he said, my practice is making friends with my cancer, being intimate, being kindly with my cancer, even if, of course, we do chemo, even if we make the effort in every way to kill, cut out, and destroy the cancer. And yet, it's also exactly our life. And it's not just cancer. You know, if someone comes with, is running down the street with a gun, your job, if I say it in such a way, isn't to say, oh, I'm going to be kind-hearted towards him, but it's to call up the police. There's someone running down the street with a gun. And it might turn out turn out he shoots at them and they shoot back at him and he gets killed. And yet that's your kind-heartedness that does that. If there's another alternative, fine. So practice and our life are not formulaic. They're not, quote, stupid. They're stupid practice where we grab onto an idea and a word and we're not meeting the Buddha that's here. Instead, we're meeting our dream. That's what Master Hogen was pointing to when he said about non-forms. See, people can grab onto that idea as well as grab onto forms. Oh, if we see the many forms as non-form, if we want to deny and miss him by using some idea of impermanence, emptiness, any other such daydreams, again, we could miss our life. Making friends with what's hard to be friends with is our practice when that's our circumstance. But friends can do all sorts of functioning, can live freely according to the circumstances. When we study the precepts, which in one sense are a guideline for skillful practice, there are three aspects of looking at them, not just the strict literal way. So, but as I, you've seen me talk about that and write about that, so I won't go into that now. Let me let you bring up what you want. Anshin.
So on Saturdays, I share a sitting group with Theravadan teacher.
Yeah.
And they have specific metta practices.
Yes.
Just an example, you think of somebody and they're a super knucklehead and you just love them anyway and you wish them all kinds of nice things. And then you kind of go up and down the ladder, people you like, people you don't like. And that's the practice. But it does seem to me that kindness arises almost unexpectedly as a result of practice.
Yes.
Not specifically practice thinking something kind about my friend here over and over again, but it just comes up and there it is. And yours, and I'm mostly very surprised by it.
Yes. And it's the manifestation of being open, loving, or if I say it more simply, of experiencing moment to moment and letting go, not holding on to the various forms of self-centeredness, judgment, attachment, and so forth as they come up. And they come up in myriad forms. Whether a shoujo was saying, oh, I was stupid, I was ripped off, they come up right there, inside, when he hears a story. Nothing changed in terms of what he did, the money he spent, except that someone told him something, and then we hear, and automatically that kind of mental reaction comes up. If someone's a knucklehead, how do we be with the knucklehead and yet see when it's appropriate not to let the knucklehead make the decision that's going to knock the knuckles against our head? So, that's our practice. And it comes not because we have formulas of what to do. You know, all sorts of practice. Sometimes practice like what you said would be wonderful, especially if we're caught up in how knuckleheaded that person is. So bowing with them and other things might be appropriate. But then it's never about them. It's about allowing this moment to permeate our life, allowing our life to permeate this moment that we encounter. See, that's again, Sesshin is unified heart, mind, that is our life. And all of us get to see what there is to do right now when I sit and breathe right now. See, that's the wonderful part of our practice. Yes, we have times like this which are more supportive and allow us to deepen practice. And yes, our practice is morning to night in all the aspects of our life. But it requires us to make the appropriate choice and support at each moment to the extent that we can see it.
I guess when I say I'm surprised by it, I want to distinguish the intention to be kind and just being kind.
Yes.
And like, oh, I'm always, I says a lot about me, I'm caught off guard by it.
Caught off guard if you have an idea that this isn't what's going to be here now. I'm going to do something else, or, yeah.
Well, the general habit of doing something else.
That's right.
When kindness arises, it can be surprising.
That's right. Because as you use the word, general habit. And habits are fine, and yet if we are run by the habits, then we miss our life. Because the habits grow out of ideas that we hold to and attach to, beliefs, even experiencing of our life. And it grows out of not being this step, this step, this step, this breath. So the problem with a practice, like you were saying, going up and down with all the people who are knuckleheads in our life, is if it's that's all you do when you do it on the cushion or wherever, then when you get up and you go back to so-called ordinary routine, then it doesn't do much. Because then it's just baby talking ourselves. Might be all that we could do. So it might be I have to sit and keep saying kind-hearted to the thoughts and feelings that come up. The practice, as we all know, is not about thinking any specific thoughts, but being open. Being open is being not knowing, is being able to manifest the wisdom that sees form and non-form, so that we meet the forms that are exactly this moment of our life. Not just meet, but are intimate as our life forms. Our life forms, not me in here and others out there. And yet, I have to take my own medicine, otherwise I would be unable to even move one step without great pain.
Relate to the openness been discussed. I have a couple of work situations that have been practice opportunities where I have to really, where I notice my reactivity very strongly. One of them, though, I wanted to do something at work with some people, and at first they were interested, but then it turned out that they really didn't like the approach I was taking. And I found out about this secondhand from my boss. But And so then I was okay, you know, we talked about it, we decided a different approach. That's okay. I think the grandmotherly kindness is, is to continue to be open. But I do notice that I have very strong thoughts about the situation.
Good.
And beliefs and fears.
And that's exactly where your practice is when those arise. To sense their, as Manshin said, the habitual reactiveness, how those arise when you're with those people or when you're sitting. It's interesting. You could be sitting here. None of them are here. No one's tapping on your shoulder and telling you about it, but it appears. And the reaction appears. And then we entangle ourselves more in the reactions. Then it's not forms and non-forms entangled, but it's entangled in our story of that and our reaction to it. So then it's our willingness to experience what's hard to be kind-heartedly. Kind-heartedly, open-heartedly to experience was hard to be with, whether we say ripped off, betrayed, whatever other emotion, thought, and it's very intense bodily. We can feel it. I remember Joko once said, if someone comes to me and says, oh, I've been sitting for a while, I never feel anger, I send them away. They're not practicing. When it comes up, it's there. And our practice is, how do we be open-hearted when the anger arises, when the sadness ripped off, the pain, the feeling of hopelessness, this pain will never go away, I can't take any more of this. And yet kind-hearted towards that. Almost as if we're kind-heartedly touching the extreme pain and saying, kind-hearted. Gentle. That's just a metaphor. Please don't. Or you could try it. It's fine if you need to. See, all sorts of skillful means according to how our circumstances are. Okay, thank you.
Copyright Elihu Genmyo Smith.